Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the South Bay Show, Music in the South Bay, on November 19th, 2014. Voted Best Local Radio Show in the Daily Breeze Reader Choice Poll 2014, and we're very proud of that. Live, love, laugh, and leave a legacy. That's what we do here in the South Bay of Los Angeles, and it's a beautiful place to do just that. I'm your host, Joe Terry, and the South Bay Show is brought to you by Solave, the first true social commerce company ever created, the official mobile phone services provider for the South Bay Show. The beginning Solave value proposition is $39 a month, unlimited talk, text, and data on the nationwide 4G network of T-Mobile. Now, that is an amazing value, but remember, that's just the key, the membership that opens the door to an amazing program and many other benefits of being a member of Solave. Solave, being the first true social commerce company, it's a very great match with us here at the South Bay Show, and we love having them as a sponsor. And again, their motto is similar to ours, live, love, laugh, and leave a legacy. That's what we intend to do with Solave. For the best value in mobile phone services, please visit whatissolave.smartsocialphone.com. Again, that's whatissolave.smartsocialphone.com. Here we talk Solave. And, of course, we are here live, and we'd love to have your comments or questions. If you would like to call in, we'd love to have it. Please give us a call at 714-242-5288. That's 714-242-5288. We'd love to have your comment or question. And we are joined today by Barry Brisk, conductor, Beach Cities Symphony Orchestra, and we're thrilled to have him. Barry Brisk first conducted in public at the age of 14 when he performed selections from South Pacific at his graduation from Webster Junior High School in West Los Angeles. As a student, he also conducted the orchestras at University High School, Mount St. Mary's College, and the University of Music, formerly Academy of Music, in Vienna, Austria, that is, where he studied with the prominent conductor teacher Hans Swarovski. Professionally, Brisk has conducted many orchestras in Southern California, as well as in Mexico and Austria. Maestro Brisk has been music director of the Beach Cities Symphony since 1994 and is particularly proud of having expanded the orchestra's repertoire. He has conducted works by more than 80 composers, more than a dozen of whom are living. Two of his compositions premiered at our concerts, Serenade for Orchestra in May of 2007 and Kaleidoscope, January of 2010. On November 20th, 2011, the Topanga Symphony presented the world premiere of his Andante and Allegro for Strings, composed when he was a student in Vienna, and on March 23, 2012, the BCSO performed his 1984 trombone concerto. He's recently composed Celebration, will open the first concert of the Beach City Symphony 65th season in November of 2014, which actually is this coming Friday. Welcome to the show, Barry Brisk.
Oh, thank you, Joe. It's always a pleasure to be here.
All right. So I think I got that all in. This is pretty exciting. Your own composition is going to be performed this coming Friday. That's exciting.
Oh, yes, because it took a couple of years to compose it. It's a rather large piece for a large orchestra. And I finished it, 2 years ago or something like that, but it takes time to find an opportunity to present it, and then the parts have to be copied by a copyist, and that takes months. Yeah. So, I've been really looking forward to this. Yes, so that's a big thing in my life.
Yes. Now, how many players will there be in the orchestra pit on Friday?
There'll be approximately 70.
70.
So it's a large orchestra. So particularly obvious will be the fact that there will be four percussionists, the timpani player who's always there, but then I have three other players who play a whole variety of instruments.
Right.
So they take up a lot of space on the stage.
Right.
And then there will also be a harp.
Right.
Now, for one of the other pieces, there's also a piano and a celesta.
Mm.
That's one performer alternates between the two instruments because they're both keyboard instruments.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be a fairly crowded stage for us.
And of course, everyone has to have a piece of music. So the copyist actually takes your composition, but then copies music specifically for a part?
Well, yes. In the old days, when we still used pen and ink, that was exactly how it was done.
Right.
Today, what happens is I send my score to the copyist, and he does it, you know, with a computer program.
Mm-hmm.
So he creates the whole big orchestra score. An orchestra score has everything on it.
Mm-hmm.
So one page will have like 23 lines of music from the piccolo, the first flute, the oboe, the trumpets, percussion, violins, and all of that.
Yeah.
Then they basically can set up the computer so that it will separate out the different parts. So you'll have a piccolo part, a first flute part, a second flute part, a third flute part, a first oboe part, and it'll do that. It's not exactly automatic because
mm-hmm.
you have to make allowances for page turns for the players. So that's what happens. It's all done on computer these days using a program. Most copyists use a program called Sibelius, which is named after the famous composer Jean Sibelius. But for some reason, that program was named Sibelius.
Oh, I see. Well, that's interesting. That is very interesting.
Yes. Now, a lot of younger composers learn to do Sibelius. I think it's even taught at universities and conservatories. But given the frustrations I have when I use the computer at times, I decided I'm not going to get into this. So I just pay somebody to do it.
Yes.
Right.
So how do you present them with the composition? I mean, how have you written it? Have you written it out longhand on lead sheets?
Right. Right. Well, in the composing process, you make sketches. You have, this is at the very beginning, you have basic ideas, whether it's a chord pattern or some rhythm or a melodic idea or some instrumental thing you want to blend the clarinet with the trombones or whatever you have. And you make little sketches, you know, they're very short, a couple of lines long. And then you have pages of sketches. Right? Then you, by this point, the piece takes shape in your head. You know, this will be the first movement, this will be the second movement. I'm going to contrast this part with that part, and then you start to put it together. And I do what we call a short score. That is, it's a continuous thing, but I don't have all 23 staves going at once.
Mm-hmm.
That would be too cumbersome. It would take too long to move forward. So I'll have like 6 or 7 staves, and I'll just pencil in flute or French horn or cello or timpani, you know, and it's a little bit of a mess, but I know what I'm doing there.
Right.
And when I finish that, then I make a neat copy using all 23 staves at once, and I laboriously write it all out so that everybody gets exactly what they're going to do. And that, of course, takes a while, depending on how much time you have. And that's where I make sure I add in all the dynamic markings for louds and softs and accents and things of that, and slur marks, and, you know, for phrasing. And so that becomes the complete thing.
Right.
And then I Xerox that and send it to the copyist, and he works from that.
Right. Wow.
And then he sends me a copy of the big score when it's out, and I proofread it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's always, those Whoa. Are kind of tedious things, because you have to look through thousands of notes
right.
and compare them. And Mike, the copyist is very good. He doesn't make many thousands of his notes, so things are going to there will be mistakes, and of course, so I point them out. And then occasionally I'll wonder, now, why did he do this?
Right.
This is weird. So then I look back at my piece, and I said, oh, my, I wrote the wrong thing.
Oh.
I meant something else. I find where I was sloppy in making my big score. I go back to my sketches. I go, no, I didn't want that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have to change that. And, of course, he, you know, that's his job. So he makes all the changes I request, you know.
I was watching a television program last night where classical music versus jazz music was featured in sort of the contrast of the two.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like a very dynamic process. I mean, especially where you're saying the copyist got it right, but I didn't mean that. I wanted it different.
Right. I my original was a little floppy in one passage.
People talk about, you know, classical music as being very staid and official and almost conservative in a way, but it can be very dynamic, can it?
Oh, it can be dynamic, yes, but there is basically no element of improvisation,
right.
which is the cornerstone of jazz.
Right, right.
Yes, I mean, various conductors can take a Mozart symphony and do it in different ways.
Mm.
So there is that amount of flexibility, but it's not loose. Like you take an old tune like Hello Dolly, and Louis Armstrong does it one way, and somebody else does it a different way, and somebody else does it a different way.
Right.
Yeah, we don't have that. also, the jazz pieces don't tend to be quite so long. Now, there's a Beethoven symphony, depending on which one, can go from 30 minutes to 45 minutes.
Yeah.
And in the jazz idiom, you seldom get pieces that are 45 minutes long.
Right.
You know? And
right.
I don't say this is a criticism by any means. It's just different.
Right. No, absolutely.
Yeah. Right.
Various kinds of, well, you can't compare really a Monet to a Rodin they're almost, you know,
oh, yeah.
sculpture.
Well, Rodin being sculpture, that's a different, a Monet compared to a, Raphael,
mm-hmm.
that's just different worlds
right.
of how they use the subject matter and how they use their paints. And, you know, there's just, yeah, it's just both wonderful, but utterly different.
And yeah. that's what makes life interesting.
Oh, yeah, that's for sure. Yes. Now, another thing that makes life interesting, I liked your comments about live, love, laugh, and legacy.
Yes.
Because, of course, we like to think that the orchestra lives. It loves its music, and we laugh and have a good time. But legacy is the key to our Friday concert.
Mm.
Because we're celebrating three different things. It is the 65th birthday of the orchestra.
Mm.
Okay, that's pretty good.
That's
good. We're not exactly signing up for Medicare, but, you know, we're around there. Okay, then it's the 50th year we've been at Marcy Auditorium.
Oh.
And Marcy Auditorium has been there for 50 years. We are the only non-college organization to play there continuously since the beginning of the auditorium at El Camino College.
Right.
And third, this is my 20th year as music director.
Wow.
So that's why I titled the piece Celebration. See, one of the little challenges I seem to have is coming up with a title for a piece. I have these musical ideas for a piece, but Symphony No. 2 is kind of boring in the 21st century as a title, and it's not a symphony anyhow. Coming up with a name like Kaleidoscope a few years ago, that took me a long time of, you know, the piece was finished. What am I going to call this thing? And I had pages covered with potential titles that made sense to me but to nobody else, and then that showed up.
Right.
And I tried a whole bunch of other things with this piece. and I won't even bore you with all the variations I had on it. And then suddenly, the fact that we were doing all this celebrating just clicked, and I said, okay, let's call it Celebration.
We are celebrating the 65th season of the Beach City Symphony, and I'm loving this discussion we're having with Barry Brisk, the music director. But of course, it wouldn't be a music show if we didn't play music. Now, we have three pieces, Barry. Which piece would you like to begin with?
Well, since we've been talking about my piece, why don't we do one of my things,
okay,
and then we can go on to the others.
Okay. So what we have is your concerto for trombone and strings.
Right.
Tell us a little bit about that piece.
Okay. That started out as a slightly smaller piece. I have a friend, an Israeli gentleman, by the name of Eitan Bezalel, who is a marvelous trombone player.
Mm-hmm.
And he was in Los Angeles when he was a student for a while. And he came back for a visit. He became principal trombone player of the Jerusalem Symphony. Oh, we're talking about 30-something years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And he came back to town and he said, you know, I need a little piece for trombone and strings because on Israeli radio, they like to play, they like to feature some of the musicians from the orchestra. And so, do you know anybody who could do that? And he was over at my house for dinner.
Mm-hmm.
And my little brain started working. And the next day I called him up and said, I'll write you a piece. So I wrote him about a 4-minute piece for trombone and 5 string players.
Mm-hmm.
And they recorded it in Jerusalem, and apparently it was played many times on Israeli radio. I, being in Los Angeles, never heard that, but okay. And then he said, well, that's a good thing. Why don't you expand it into a concerto? And so first 4 minutes
mm-hmm.
became the opening of the concerto of the first movement, and then I simply expanded that movement, and then I added a second and third movements.
Oh.
Right, and so this was first performed in 1984, and it was performed in 1985 with Eitan Bezalel as a trombone soloist.
Mm-hmm.
While I'm on the subject of Eitan, he then went on to become principal trombone player at the Maggio Musicale in Florence, Italy, and he was there for at least 20 years. He just retired last year. Zubin Mehta hired him to be the principal trombone player, which is, you know, quite an honor.
Mm.
And he distinguished himself there for many, many years. Now, as I said, he's in retirement, I believe still living in Florence, Italy.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah.
What a connection. Well, this is a piece with history.
Right. Yes, indeed.
People in Israel probably still remember when they played that piece on the radio.
Well, I don't know how many people would remember a 4-minute piece from 30 years ago, but let's hope they do. Yes.
Without further ado, Concerto for Trombone and Strings by composer Barry Brisk. Thank you. Concerto for Trombone and Strings by Barry Brisk.
Right.
Now,
if that appealed to anybody, that's available to listen to on YouTube.
On YouTube. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
All right. I also have five other compositions, which just a couple of weeks ago went up on YouTube. So if you put my name in, go to YouTube, put my name in, all of these things will show up for your listening pleasure.
I noticed that there were several pieces up there, and I was going to ask about that. Why did you decide to put them up at this time?
Because, one, they're available. The performances were all from the 1980s, actually. And I put them up now because it struck me, and I also have a friend who can help me do that. I really couldn't do that myself. I'm a little computer shy, shall we say.
Yeah.
So I had a friend who could help me. But it was an interesting process because back in the 80s, we didn't have CDs. And so the performance I have are all on cassettes.
Mm.
And cassettes can be a little bit, the quality of the sound isn't so good. Right. So I took these to a professional studio where he took the cassettes and got the music onto the computer,
mm-hmm.
and then several people were involved. They got rid of what we used to call tape hiss,
right.
which is always there, and then you could get rid of some ambient noise, because these were live performances. So, if somebody coughed or dropped something, you'd hear a little clunk. They could get rid of a great deal of that kind of thing and clean it up. So I had that done. Then we put it up on YouTube when we had, good quality sound.
Okay. Yeah. That's wonderful. So is there more music to come? Or are you in a process of doing that?
Yes, I got a one piece that there's just some little technical glitch. We couldn't get it up, but hopefully in the next couple of weeks that'll go up. And then there may be a couple of other things coming up in the course of the next year, but that's all too vague to talk about.
Right. Okay. Well, wonderful. It's begun. You've begun colonizing cyberspace.
Right, yes.
So I have to tell you, Barry, the first thing that I thought of when we were thinking about doing this show to open the 65th season was that it's you know, as you say, it's triple anniversaries. Your time with the orchestra, 20 years, 5 years. I'm sorry, it's been 5 years since what?
No, 50 years, not 50. Five.
Yeah, okay. 50
years at Marcy Auditorium.
Marcy Auditorium.
Right.
Those are wonderful anniversaries, but also the website is beautiful. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because I mean, a lot of people, young people and old people, will communicate or find out about the Beach City Symphony through the website, and it is gorgeous. It has had a full facelift.
Oh yes, thank you. Well, 20 years ago, one of the musicians in the orchestra, Peter Landecker, who's still with us, started our first website, which came around the time I started working there. And of course, 20 years ago, things were a little different. Not everybody was quite so sophisticated at using, going to such things. 20 years ago, I wasn't even online myself, although I had a computer that I used as a glorified typewriter. Mm. So Peter set up a very nice website for that period. It was effective. You could click on this, that, and the other and go to different places. Well, times have changed. We've all, even I, have become more sophisticated with the computer. And so someone else from the orchestra, Brad Cohen, has taken on the responsibility of modernizing the website and making it look more 21st century. So not only do we have many more things are in color, they're clear, there are lots more pictures that make things inviting to look at, and the information is all there, and it's very easy to navigate. You know, it's just all out there. You can click on history, or you can click on personnel, and you'll find out the names of all the musicians in the orchestra.
Right.
You can click on supporters, and it'll show organizations that support us. So if you want to, you can click on Amazon.com, and if you go there through our website, then we get something like 1% of all sales are donated to us from Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
And we have all kinds of other, you know, the history and photos from the last, you know, 20 pictures from the last concert and from the previous concert, and it's all really nicely worked out.
Right. No, it's wonderful, and also it's mobile friendly. Did you know that?
That doesn't surprise me. I haven't looked it up on my smartphone yet. My smartphone is smarter than I am. So, but that doesn't surprise me at all. That it's it's up to date.
Right. Right. It is up to date, and that's you know. And in my other life, being a software engineer and website developer, we find that they say 60% of internet traffic is mobile traffic today.
Huh.
And it's
that's
only
amazing.
Growing. Yeah, it is amazing. It's kind of hard to put your mind around that 60% of internet traffic is actually on mobile devices of one kind or another.
Yes, I remember a few years ago, I was at a board meeting of the orchestra, and somebody asked a question about something, and nobody was sure. And a minute and a half later, somebody raised his hand and said, okay, the definition of that is, and he just looked it up on his mobile phone and had all the information right there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this was new to me.
Right.
You know, but even I could do that sort of thing nowadays. So it's... Yes, we've come a long ways.
Right, right. It's amazing what's going on now with technology. But even though technology is going at lightning speed or warp speed, music doesn't really change. The technology of music changes, but the music itself and its emotional impact on people remains. And I'm thrilled about that.
Oh, yes. Well, if you listen to the Beethoven Fifth Symphony, you get the same thrill that you got 40 years ago when you heard it as a child, and that's all still there. That's true.
Yes, it's very comforting to hear a piece that you've heard as a child, because it really is a sort of a comfort and a touchstone. It's like going home.
Exactly.
It's wonderful. Now, we have two other pieces, and I want to make sure we get a lot of music in. We're going to talk about, are there personnel changes or any other highlights for the symphony in its 20th, or in your 20th year, but what's going on with the symphony now? Anything to highlight?
Well, people always come and go. Right. That is, you know, somebody moves out of town, they retire, you know, their interests change, and then we're constantly getting new people. So too many names for me to remember here. I can tell you that one of the younger ladies in the orchestra is now expecting her second child, but right. She's going to be at the concert on Friday.
Okay.
So you get those kinds of delightful things. Bob Peterson, our second French horn player, has been there all 65 years.
Yes.
He is now 93 years old, and if you looked at him, you wouldn't think he was more than 70, and he does everything. In addition to playing French horn, he drives safely and, you know, traveled to Europe a couple years ago. So he's doing – we're very proud of Bob. Mm-hmm. And, you know, things happen just like in any organization. You know, if you're in the middle of the organization, you don't sense the changes. Right. But if you sort of step back and realize, well, gee – 4 years ago, it was different, right. You know, but it's just a gradual evolution, like in all organizations.
Right, right, right. Well, we have two more pieces. I'd love to get to one of them. Which one would you like to go with?
Well, in the order of the concert, the next one is the Tchaikovsky Piano Concerto.
Right. What a wonderful piece. And as you said, the first movement is very famous, and it certainly is.
Well, right. Well, the whole thing is very famous, but that's what, at the beginning, is what everybody recognizes right off the bat. Mm. Yes. Our soloist for this concert is Carlos Gardels, a young man, you know, 25 years old, more or less, who's doing this for the first time. Very wonderful, competent musician. He actually grew up down the street from me, which is how I got to meet him originally. But that's, you know, 10 or 15 years ago. And he was good back then, too, I must add. Yes. And it's such a Russian piece. You know, we associate it, of course, with Russia. But we have to remember, for those of us who have a little bit of knowledge in the subject, that it was first performed by the German pianist Hans von Bülow. This is back in the 1880s, in Boston. The world premiere of this piece was with the Boston Symphony, and I believe the Hungarian conductor Artur Nikisch was the conductor for that. But it was first performed in the United States.
Wow.
And it's such an iconic Russian thing. It's just one of those little quirks of history that's where the first performance came up. Yeah.
I love it, and so this piece, was there any is there any story to tell about the rehearsal or conducting of this piece? Was this challenging, or was it?
It's what we call standard repertoire. So everybody's played it before, and it's in everybody's ear. Even if they haven't played it before, everybody knows what it sounds like. That wasn't particularly challenging. I mean, you work on it, so that wasn't particularly challenging. But we did have a very funny thing. We performed Marcy Auditorium on Friday nights, and we have rehearsals in Marcy Auditorium Wednesday night and Thursday night preceding that. However, before that, we rehearse on Wednesday evenings in the band room at Redondo Union High School. And so they have a small upright piano there, which we use. Like last Wednesday night, Carlos was there for a rehearsal. Now, being a high school band room, pianos get used and overused. So we've used this many times in the past, and it's always been a little bit out of tune. About 3 weeks ago, in the evening, before our rehearsal began, a piano tuner showed up. And a technician, and she tuned it up so it's much better than it's been for years. And she adjusted something on the pedal to stop a squeak. So last week, last Wednesday night, came to the rehearsal. We had already sort of pushed the piano in place before he got there. And so just, you know, something you do, I just sat down on the bench and, you know, played a couple of little things. And I noticed that the sustain pedal didn't work. So this is the thing that sort of lets the sound continue when you pick your hand up and go to the next chord. So there's this big passage right at the beginning when the piano comes in, about 10 seconds into the piece. It has these big chords, pom, pom, bim, and the pedal sustains the sound as the hands move from one chord to the next. However, without the same, without the sustain pedal going, it sounded like buck, buck, buck. It was just utterly dry and funny. When we did that, the orchestra just burst into laughter. You know, it was just so funny. But Carlos is a good guy, and he just went with it, and we did a rehearsal anyhow. And I told the person in charge, the band director there, about this little issue. So hopefully by now it will have been repaired.
Well, I am thrilled. I can't wait to hear this piece live. It's of course we've all heard it before, but I don't think I've ever seen it performed live. And looking forward to it. Tchaikovsky, Piano Concerto No. 1. And we're just going to play a bit of the first movement, but you only need about 10 seconds, and it's iconic.
Oh, yes, definitely.
Everyone. Well, without further ado, Tchaikovsky, Piano Concerto No. 1.
Thank you.
Wonderful piece. Looking forward to that so much. Wow. This is going to be a workout for the soloist.
Oh, that's for sure, yes.
Yeah, that's for sure. It's very physical, and very exciting. So tell me, Barry, a little bit about you. How are you doing? It's been a year since we've talked last, sort of.
Well, yeah, 6 months. We talked in May.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. 6 months. And it was a very successful season last year. Give us a little bit of an overview for this season. What are you looking forward to most in the season? Any pieces that you're looking forward to particularly?
Oh, well, it's all wonderful music. On the next concert at the end of January, we're doing a piece. It's done a fair amount by Ernst Bloch, who is a Swiss gentleman who spent a great deal of his life in the United States, called Shlomo, which means Solomon, as in King Solomon, which is for cello and orchestra with Jerome Kessler, a soloist. That's a big piece that we're doing. On the same concert, Scheherazade by Rimsky-Korsakov, which is a very beloved, famous piece. Mm. And then on the third concert, we've got the wonderful Brahms Third Symphony. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of good stuff to look forward to. And then in May, we will have, three or four young student soloists who have yet to be determined. The contest to pick them happens at the beginning of February, and that's always exciting to, what's the repertoire, what are they like, how are they going to do it and all that. So we have a number of things to look forward to this year.
Very interesting. I was looking at March 20th. That's going to be very interesting because there's Carl Maria von Weber.
Right. Oh, yeah, that's the overture to his famous opera, Der Freischütz,
yes,
which means the free shooters. It's a very German story, sort of not exactly a dark story. It takes place in a forest and there's hunters and, it's his most famous thing, and it got done a great deal in Central Europe. That opera, as an opera, doesn't get played too much in the United States because the story just doesn't appeal to the American audience that much. But many of the arias are known, and the overture is very famous. Right.
Very interesting. All right. That's looking good. And then, of course, piece on January 23rd. From Frederick Delius?
Delius. Right. He was an Englishman, first part of the 20th century, and he was an English impressionist. When we think of impressionist composers, we think of France and mainly Debussy and Ravel. But he was an Englishman who was of the impressionist style, where sort of chords tend to blur together, and he uses chords that hadn't been done previously in the German or Russian world. Yes, and Delius is interesting because he also spent part of his adult life in Florida, and he had an orange farm, and he raised oranges for a few years in Florida. Right. So we'll talk about that when we get into the January concert.
Okay.
Right.
Wow. That's very interesting. When we talk about the orchestra, of course, there's lots of other things going on. As you say, it's always evolving in terms of an organization and so forth. Are there any other changes that we don't know, you don't see exposed, but behind the scenes that are interesting and exciting for the 65th season?
Oh, well, there's something you'll hardly notice, I think. In the piece we have yet to talk about, the Grand Canyon Suite, there's an instrument in the percussion section called a wind machine. So it makes not exactly something close to the sound of whooshing air. And it's basically like a drum, in the sense of an oil drum, with a crank on the side that you can just make it go around and around and around. And then there's like a sheet of some, not exactly metal, but some hard, some firm fabric.
Mm-hmm.
So it gives it a swishing sound. So at first, I wasn't sure how we were going to do that, because it would be very expensive to rent such a device.
Yes.
Then our percussionist told us, well, we found this online, and so we're going to just, you know, have a computer there and play it, you know, the sound of this thing when it comes up. Well, okay, this is the modern world. We can
Ooh.
Do that.
Ooh.
But then he said, no. One of the percussionists has decided to build one.
Okay.
So he's going to make one of these things, which I will see for the first time at the rehearsal tonight. And we'll see how effective it is. But, I mean, they know what it is, and they know what the sound is.
Right.
So you know, it'll be there.
Yeah.
Yes, so that's a slightly different wrinkle.
Okay. That's what a handmade instruments.
Right.
That's a new thing, a new wrinkle.
Yes. Yes.
Now, how do you pronounce the composer's name?
That's Ferdi Groffé.
Groffé.
Right, there should be an accent on the final E.
Yes, yes. Now, this piece has some history to it, because it was used in Hollywood in the 30s, I understand. And apparently, Philip Morris, the famous tobacco manufacturer, had a radio show in the 30s, and they used this quite often, and it became associated with many of their sort of shows and many of the shows that they sponsored, including I Love Lucy, apparently.
Yeah, the I Love Lucy connection I wasn't so familiar with. But I remember as a little boy on the radio, something like the Jack Benny Show, and there would be a Lucky Strike commercial, and you would hear this little tune in the background from the Grand Canyon Suite.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. No, it's an interesting piece. It was written in the early 30s. I mean, it was published first in 1932, and it became very popular, maybe because of all the exposure through the commercials. That used the third movement, which is called On the Trail.
Mm.
And it has sort of the sounds of donkeys walking and a donkey braying and its cute little tune to go with it. So that's sort of the most unique movement of the whole thing. It's got five movements altogether.
Right.
And that's been used also in like cowboy things or in general, if not cowboy, Western, to evoke the Western feel, because it's one of those things that, because of the title the piece has, it just sort of became evocative.
Right.
So the piece was very popular in the 30s, 40s, and into the 50s. You would hear major orchestras playing it all the time. As with many things, it's slightly gone out of fashion. And if you talk to people under 30 years of age, they've never heard of it. So we're doing it because it's a worthwhile piece to do. And it gives the orchestra a lot to, you know, it's challenging to perform correctly, and the orchestra always likes a good challenge. So we're glad to do it. Now, Ferdi Groffé, actually, I guess as a result of the success of the Grand Canyon Suite, he wrote several other bits of Americana. He has a Hudson Valley Suite and a Mississippi River Suite. And I remember a cousin of mine had a recording of these things, which I heard way back when I was very young, but they were never performed. You never heard of them happening.
Mm.
And I even saw in a catalog recently, he had a thing that was titled Great Americans Suite, and it only listed one movement, and that was Henry Ford. So, I mean, Henry Ford was a very clever man. Whether we want to call him great,
yeah,
I'm not sure, but that also never gets performed.
Hmm.
And the first place one tended to hear about Groffé was that he was the arranger for the Paul Whiteman Band in the 20s.
Mm-hmm.
And
he was the arranger.
Right. He, you know, they would do a song, and somebody had to arrange it. The song was written for, you know, voice and piano, so somebody had to make the arrangement for the band.
Right.
And so he did that. But at one point, Paul Whiteman was getting more serious, as it were. He invited George Gershwin to write a piece for the band, and with Gershwin as a soloist. And this ended up being the Rhapsody in Blue. But Gershwin, who had started his career writing songs and then writing musicals, they always had arrangers who put it together. So Ferdy Groffay did the first version of the Rhapsody in Blue, arranging it for the 18-piece Paul Whiteman Orchestra.
Wow.
And then from that experience, Gershwin, who was, of course, brilliant and a fast learner, after that, everything he wrote for orchestra, he orchestrated himself. The Rhapsody in Blue, the Piano Concerto in F, Porgy and Bess, all those wonderful things he did shortly after the Rhapsody in Blue. So as I said, he was a very fast learner. But right. The first version, which one occasionally hears for the 18 instruments plus a piano, was done by Ferdy Groffay. So those are his two big things, orchestrating the Rhapsody in Blue and composing the Grand Canyon Suite.
Now, that's wonderful history, and that's why I asked, because in researching the piece, I found that it has a great deal of history. Thank you. You sure. Do have command of the history of that piece.
Well, that's part of it. That's part of the job of being the music director.
And I just wanted to point out something along with the other wonderful things from the website. They included notes for the current performance coming up on the 21st. And it talks about Betty Woodyard, South Bay
yes.
cellist and music teacher Betty Woodyard, passed away October 3rd, age 93.
Right. Wow. Yes. Well, she, of course, had retired from cello playing. But a number of years ago, she was our principal cellist and played a number of concerts with us. She was a lovely lady.
Yes.
And, of course, at 93, she, you know, passed away peacefully. And so we're dedicating this concert to her memory.
Wonderful. Wonderful.
Yeah.
Wonderful. So I just wanted to make sure that people knew that and that we mentioned that. And so now we have this piece. I want to play a little bit of it, and it's a wonderful piece. It's the Grand Canyon Suite. Very interesting. And this is the On the Trail movement. Are we ready for it?
I'm ready.
Okay, here we go. Groffay, Ferdy Groffay, the Grand Canyon Suite, and this is On the Trail. This is the movement On the Trail.
Thank you.
Thank you, Philip Morris.
Yes.
Wonderful.
Yes, it's very clever the way he captures a donkey braying at the very beginning and all that kind of thing, and then the sort of clop, clop of the horse, you know, walking along, going on that trail that goes down the Grand Canyon, if you've been there, you know. So it's a very well-done piece.
And I think many people will hear echoes of this piece in many, many others that that try to evoke the West. And
oh, definitely. It was one of the first pieces that succeeded at that, and so there were many people who, you know, copied the style to give it that Western feel.
Right.
Yes.
Right. Wonderful. Looking forward to Friday's performance very, very much. Again, Maestro Brisk, thank you for joining us.
It's always a pleasure, Joe.
And I hope we're just excited about this season, the 65th season. It's going to be fabulous. We're going to make sure that we're at each performance. And I thank you so much for joining us, Barry. Everyone, please join us for free. The admission is free at the Marseille Auditorium at El Camino College this coming Friday night. And if they arrive, what is it, 7:15, you'll have a lecture before the concert?
The lecture's actually at 7:30.
7:30.
I'll talk for about 20 minutes, and then the concert's at 8:15.
8:15, excellent. Well, thank you very much. And that's our show, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be here again for the next performance of the Beach City Symphony. And we love doing it, and it's a great pleasure. And that's our show. Thank you for joining us. Thank you so much for joining us. And we'll see you at the concert on Friday. Bye-bye, everybody.